We've been talking about this congregation and its future the past couple of weeks, haven't we? You know, things that you and I personally can do to help ensure that this congregation is in existence 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, and that it's a faithful congregation. And we've spent two Sunday mornings talking about those very things and how important they are. Well, if you go back 30, 40 years or more, there were people in the congregation here that had they not worked and done what they should have done and taught and helped and served, there wouldn't be a congregation here. So we need to be thankful for those people. Well, now it's up to us to make sure that, again, in the future, 20, 30, 40 years from now, there is a congregation here of God's people. This morning is kind of the third of those three lessons that deal with some things you and I can do to help ensure that this congregation is here in the future. And this one's going to be a very specific lesson. It's about one thing in particular. And I simply called it Be an Encourager. You mean the whole lesson's about being an encourager? Yes, it is. The whole lesson's about being an encourager. Because this world is filled with people who discourage. I don't know if there's classes or degrees you can get in discouragement, but it certainly seems like there must be. I found a few of those in the past, things that people have said about individuals. And let me read a few of those to kind of get us started and kind of tell you what I'm talking about. He was rejected as too awkward and clumsy to be a ball boy in a Davis Cup tennis match. Stan Smith went on to become the officially ranked number one tennis player in the world in the early 70s. Balding, skinny, can dance a little, they said of Fred Astaire at his first audition. Beethoven's music teacher declared him hopeless at composing. Albert Einstein's parents feared he was subnormal. Walt Disney was fired for lacking ideas. 38 times, publishers turned down Margaret Mitchell's Gone with the Wind. They knew a good story when they saw one. That, many experts, couldn't be wrong. Discouragers. Discouragers, that's what they were. And they were quite good at it. But yet those people didn't let discouragement keep them down. You know, we've been talking on Wednesday night. We're studying 1 Samuel. And there is one of the best examples of an encourager in all the Bible. We're going to look at one in the Old Testament, one in the New Testament. And that one in the Old Testament we've talked about many times on Wednesday evening. And of course that's Jonathan, David's best friend. And in some of those accounts, I wish we could read them all, and of course we don't have time, but in so many of those accounts, we see what an encourager is supposed to do. And there's one particular one that I want to focus on this morning. It's found in 1 Samuel chapter 23. So please read with me these few verses. 1 Samuel chapter 23, and we'll begin reading in verse 14. 1 Samuel 23, and we'll begin in verse 14. This is part of David's life when he's running, when he's in the wilderness and different places, running from Saul. Notice 1 Samuel 23, verse 14. And David stayed in strongholds in the wilderness and remained in the mountains in the wilderness of Ziph. Saul sought him every day, but God did not deliver him into his hand. So David saw that Saul had come out to seek his life. And David was in the wilderness of Ziph in a forest. Then Jonathan, Saul's son, arose and went to David in the woods. Notice this last phrase. And strengthened his hand in God. And he said to him, "Do not fear, for the hand of Saul my father shall not find you. You shall be king over Israel, and I shall be next to you. Even my father Saul knows that." So the two of them made a covenant. before the Lord. And David stayed in the woods, and Jonathan went to his own house. Did you see that one phrase? Strengthened his hand in the Lord. You know, one definition of encouraged is strengthening someone's hand. Have you ever been in that situation where you just can't hardly hold your hands up anymore? You know, life has just kind of beat you down to the point where it's an effort just to keep your hands up. Well, an encourager, like Jonathan, came along to strengthen his hand. That's what he did. Held his hand up. And I know we could look at many other accounts in the Old Testament of people who did that, strengthened each other's hands. Another definition of to encourage is to inspire with hope. To inspire with courage. To inspire with confidence. That's what encouragers do. They inspire people. They inspire them to do greater things, to not give up, to have confidence. You can do this. Someone I know did that with Big David and Little David to lead singing. Someone had to be an encourager, and I'm sure neither one of them would be singing. Someone had to encourage them to get up and lead singing. Someone was inspiring them with confidence. An encourager does that. That's what Jonathan was doing for David. He was inspiring him. He was supporting him. That's what an encourager does. An encourager supports another person. They help them. They're kind of underneath them, holding them up. Encouragers aren't always in the limelight, but often they are there to help the person who's in the limelight. To hold their hands up, to strengthen their hands, to support them, to inspire them, to stimulate or spur on. If you've ever been to a cross-country meet where, you know, the guys and gals are running and so many laps and so forth, usually the coach will be at different points doing what? Encouraging them, spurring them on. Maybe, you know, you're 3 seconds behind the last lap. So they're encouraging them. You know, pick the pace up, go a little faster, because I know you can. See, that's what an encourager does. They inspire, they give people courage, they support, they spur on, they strengthen. Now, when you look at the history of the church here in Granby, I know there were different individuals who did that. Did that for you, did that for other people. And if they hadn't done that, we may not be here. And by we, I mean the church here in Granby. A church's future, someone in its past must have been an encourager so that there is a future. Encouragement is vital. What would David have accomplished if it hadn't been for Jonathan? Probably not near as much. Jonathan, you might say, was the heir to the throne, wasn't he? But yet he knew that God had chosen David. So did Jonathan get all upset and said, well, I'm not going to help. If I'm not going to be the boss, then I'm just going to do nothing. No, he did just the opposite. He became an encourager to David, and supported and strengthened David. Well, let's move many years into the future. First century. The first century church, it's new. It's new in the world. The first century church needed encouragers. Well, one comes along. A guy by the name of Barnabas. We're introduced to him in Acts chapter 4. Acts chapter 4. The church is very new in Acts chapter 4. Hasn't been around very long at all. In Acts chapter 4, we're introduced to this guy named Barnabas. And Joseph, who was also named Barnabas by the apostles, notice who he was named Barnabas by. The apostles, which is translated son of encouragement. A Levite of the country of Cyprus. See, the apostles called him, you're a Barnabas. You're a son of encouragement. They could tell what Barnabas was like and the good he was going to do. Barnabas wasn't in the limelight. He wasn't a Paul or a Peter or a John. He didn't get to write a whole bunch of the New Testament. But his role was vital in the church in the first century. From almost the very beginning, Acts chapter 4, the church only started at the end of Acts chapter 2. He was an encourager. That kind of described his whole life. Barnabas, you're an encourager. And that's what we see Barnabas doing over and over and over again. He was the son of encouragement. He was the son of comfort, some translations have. The son of comfort. Well, we move to Acts chapter 9. We see something else about Barnabas. Notice, beginning in verse 26. One of his major roles is going to be support Paul. Acts chapter 9, verse 26. And when Saul had come to Jerusalem, he tried to join the disciples. But they were all afraid of him and did not believe that he was a disciple. But Barnabas, notice what Barnabas does, took him and brought him to the apostles, and he, Barnabas, declared to them how he had seen the Lord on the road and that he had spoken to him and how he had preached boldly at Damascus in the name of Jesus. So he was with them at Jerusalem, coming in and going out. And if it hadn't been for Barnabas speaking up for him and supporting him, the rest of them may not have accepted him, at least as readily as they did. So Barnabas, that was his job. See, he encouraged and strengthened and supported Paul. And he did that many times. Turn over a couple pages more, Acts chapter 11, notice verse 22. See something else that Barnabas does. Acts chapter 11, verse 22. Then news of these things came to the ears of the church in Jerusalem. And what'd they do? And they sent out Barnabas. Why'd they choose Barnabas? Because he was the son of encouragement. And that's what he was going to do. To go as far as Antioch, when he had came and had seen the grace of God, he was glad and encouraged them all that with purpose of heart they should continue with the Lord, for he was a good man, full of the Holy Spirit and of faith, and a great many people were added to the Lord. Why did the apostle send Barnabas? Because he knew Barnabas would encourage them, would help them, would support them, would give them direction, would inspire them. He was going to do all of that. He excelled at it. That would be a wonderful phrase to have written on your tombstone. He was an encourager. And that's what you were known for. He was an encourager. William Barclay wrote about this. One of the highest of Christian duties is the duty of encouragement. Many a time a word of praise or thanks or appreciation or cheer has kept a Christian on his feet. Sometimes that's all it takes. Is that word of praise or cheer or thanks or appreciation to keep somebody on their feet. And I'm sure that happened countless times since this congregation was started. There were people who gave a word of praise or appreciation or thanks that kept somebody on their feet. The need for encouragement is stressed in almost every book in the New Testament. But let's focus on just a few. Let's turn with me to Hebrews chapter 10. Hebrews chapter 10. And we'll begin reading in verse 24. Hebrews chapter 10, let's begin in verse 24. And this is all about Christians here. That's who's being addressed, and that's what this whole book is about, Christians. And he says in verse 24, and let us, so who's us? Well, that's us. That's who the us is. And let us consider one another. Well, how do I do that? In order to stir up love and good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together as is the manner of some, but exhorting one another. And so much the more as you see the day approaching. What am I supposed to do? I'm to consider one another. I'm to consider you, and you're to consider me. And this consideration for one another, what's it supposed to produce? It's in order to, or its purpose is, to stir up. Remember, that's one of the definitions of to encourage. To encourage love and good works. And how does he say we can do that? We accomplish it when we assemble. So when we assemble, we're encouraging one another. We're stirring each other up. We're considering one another. And this is one of the main places we do it. We're all here together. We're all of the same mind, the same purpose, the same goal. So while we're assembled, one of the outcomes or results is to do what? Is to encourage one another in love and good works. Stir one another up, strengthen one another, support one another, inspire one another. Well, I just don't think I can talk to my worker, the person I work with about Christ. Well, what am I supposed to do if I hear that? Well, I'm supposed to encourage them. See, that's what an encourager does. I'm supposed to inspire them, to stir them up with confidence. Yeah, you can. I know you can. You can do that. See, that has happened in the past, or otherwise we wouldn't be here. That's the point of all of this. If we want the church to be here in the future, this is one of the things we must do. Inspire one another. Support one another. Strengthen one another. Spur one another on. With love and good works. We need to be concerned about others. We have to put them first. Basically, you and I have an assignment. Isn't that what the writer here is saying in Hebrews chapter 10, verses 24 and 25? You have an assignment. Here is what you must do. You're to consider one another. You're to put others before what you want. Sacrifice, if you must, in order to do what? Because you need to encourage and stir up and inspire others to love and good works. 1 Corinthians chapter 13 has this. Of course, that's the chapter about love. And the New King James simply begins verse 4 by saying, love suffers long and is kind. One of the translations I looked up this week said, love looks for ways to help improve other people's lives. I like that instead of kind. It looks to see how it can help other people's lives to be better. So when I'm encouraging people, when I'm considering people, when I'm stirring people up, I'm trying to help improve their lives in some way. Well, people in the past have to have done that. We need to improve other people's lives. Well, that means that you and I have to take time to make a difference. Somebody, I guarantee it, somebody here needs your encouragement. So who are you cheering on? Who are you helping to succeed? I'll be the first one to admit it. I would never be where I am in life. I would probably have never became a gospel preacher or done any of these things if it hadn't been for Denise. She's been my biggest supporter. She's always been there for me. Always. And there's just no way I would be here without her. And of course, that's what husbands and wives are supposed to do for each other. But she does it really, really well. More than I do it probably the other way. So that's what an encourager does. It helps other people achieve what you know they can achieve. See, that's what inspires means, right? Inspires. 1 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 1. If you're still in Corinthians, notice chapter 8, verse 1 says this. The very end of that. Now, concerning things offered to idols, we know that we all have knowledge. Knowledge puffs up, but love edifies. Edifies. Kind of an expanded translation of edifies is encourages people to grow to their full stature. So when we edify, we're helping people grow to what they can become. That's edification. That's edifying. People need to know that we care and that we help bring out the best in them. One of the things that we need to practice is complimenting other people. Take time to point out what they're doing that's right. Yeah, they may be doing a whole bunch of stuff that's wrong. But point out something that they're doing right. You know, Paul did this repeatedly in his letters. I wrote down Romans, Ephesians, and Philippians. If you read chapter 1 in those three letters, you'll see Paul, that was one of the first things he did when he wrote to a group of Christians somewhere. He said something positive about them. Romans, remember, in chapter 1, he talks about how the report of their faith has gone out to the whole world. And in Ephesians chapter 1 and in Philippians chapter 1, he does similar type things. Now, all of those congregations had some issues, but he started out the letter by encouraging them, by pointing out some of the things they were doing right. And there was a lot of things they were doing right. And encouragement is so vital. It has tremendous rewards. This was in the Reader's Digest a number of years ago. This person wrote, "One morning I opened the door to get the newspaper and was surprised to see a strange little dog with our paper in his mouth. Well, delighted with this unexpected delivery service, I fed him some treats. Well, the following morning I was horrified to see the same dog in front of our door wagging his tail surrounded by 8 newspapers. I spent the rest of the morning returning the papers to their owners." Now, encouragement. Encourage that dog. And look what the dog did. Returned many times. I want to close with something that I hope kind of hits the spot. We want this congregation to be here in the future. Whether it's 5 years or 50 years, we want it to be here. And we want it to be a thriving, faithful congregation. The last 2 weeks we've talked about a number of things that we must do to help that come about. And the thing today is encouraging. This is one person's take on the importance of it. If your niche is encouraging, please don't stop. If it's embracing, demonstrating warmth, compassion, and mercy to feathers that's been ruffled or ones that's been bruised by adversity, for goodness sake, keep stroking. Don't quit, whatever you do. If God made you a patter, then keep on padding to the glory of God. It's one of the most important things you can do is to encourage. Because as we started the lesson out, this world is filled with discouragers. It's filled with them. And you and I must be there for each other to encourage, to inspire, to strengthen, to support, to spur on. And it's necessary if we want this congregation to be here. We have several new Christians in our congregation. Well, let's inspire them. Let's spur them on. Let's encourage them. We have people who have had difficult times recently. Well, what can we do? Well, we can encourage them. We can inspire them with hope. We can support them. We can strengthen their hands like Jonathan did for David. It's a vital part of any congregation. So if that's what you do best, you know, as that quote said, don't stop. Keep on doing it. And when we have an invitation is an encouragement, is what it is. It's to encourage people to think about, number one, are they a child of God? And if not, the invitation song is to encourage them to think about responding and becoming a child of God. It's also an encouragement for Christians to think about what kind of lives they have been leading. And if they need to confess before the congregation, it's an encouragement to do that. And so when David leads this song in just a moment, think about that's what the song is doing. It's encouraging you, it's inviting you to make a response, to respond if you need to do that. So let's all stand and think about those things as David leads us in this song. Let's stand, please.